This meeting of the House State Affairs Committee will come to order. The time is 3:02 on March 28th, 2023. Members present, Representative Carpenter, Representative Johnson, Representative Story, Representative Armstrong, Representative Wright, and myself, Representative Shaw. We have a quorum to conduct business. Please silence your cell phones. If anyone in the audience needs to pass a note to committee members, please get the attention of our committee aide, Josh Walden, and he'll take care of it. I'd like to thank our committee secretary. Back on the record, I'd like to thank our committee secretary, Sophia Tenney, and Talia Ames for teleconferencing. On our agenda today, we have House Bill 135, sponsored by Representative Craig Johnson. House Bill 1, sponsored by Representative Rauscher. House Bill 37, sponsored by Representative Schrage. And House Bill 129, sponsored by the House Judiciary Committee. I'll note that we had initially scheduled House Bill 140 for first hearing today. We will not be hearing House Bill 140 today. We postponed that bill and have scheduled it to be heard under bills previously heard and scheduled at Thursday's hearing. I'd like to make note, Representative Allard has joined us at 3:04. Also, I'd like to note that we may not get to House Bill 129 today, considering time allotment. If we don't make it all the way to House Bill 129, we'll take it up at a future meeting. Our first order of business is House Bill 135, an act disapproving recommendations of the State Officers' Compensation Commission and providing for an effective date, sponsored by our Rules Chair, Representative Craig Johnson. It's the first hearing for this bill, so our intention is to hear it, take public testimony, and seek the will of the committee. I'd like to invite the sponsor to the table to present the bill along with his staff, Tom Wright. Representative Johnson, would you please put yourself and your staff on the record?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. With your permission, I'll stay here. We'll let Tom in the firing squad. Thank you, Representative Craig Johnson. Thank you for hearing this bill today. This is normally the kiss of death, but this truly is a simple bill. The concept behind it is not as simple as the language. Basically, what it does is it disapproves the recommendation of the State Officers' Compensation Commission and provides an effective date. This is the commission that is in charge of pay raises. And what this bill does is basically reject that report. So with that, I'd like to turn it over with your permission, Mr. Chair, to Tom Wright.
Thank you. Mr. Wright, please put yourself on the record.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, my name is Tom Wright, staff to Representative Craig Johnson. As you all know, Senate Bill 86 passed both bodies and was sent to the governor on March 8th. The State Officers' Compensation Commission met after a new board was named and issued an amended report, and that came out on March 16th, and it set legislative salaries at $84,000 per year. Senate Bill 86 was subsequently vetoed on March 20th, which meant the pay raises for the governor, lieutenant governor, and also for the department heads, and questionably, the legislature were to go into effect. You have the legal opinion that was requested by our office, and there's some ambiguity as to whether or not the original veto of Senate Bill 86 included legislative salaries. Some say yes, some say no, and that's the reason for this bill. Legislative legal has said that in likelihood, the courts may find that the veto did include the legislative pay raises, which came after the fact, but they said there are remedies the legislature could undertake. One was to draft a bill or have a bill introduced that said notwithstanding the language of the 60-day period in which the legislature had to act, and include the legislative pay raises along with the governor, lieutenant governor, and department heads. Or the other avenue was to not appropriate funds to fund those new increases. As we know, departments can adjust funds, move them around as they see fit. So whether or not that would actually take effect is also questionable. So what House Bill 135 does is disapprove the increases for the governor, lieutenant governor, department heads, and the legislature, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you for that presentation, Mr. Wright. Are there any questions from the members? Seeing none. Do we have anyone? This brings us to public testimony. I'll go ahead and open public testimony now. Do we have anyone in the room who would like to provide testimony on House Bill 135? Seeing none. Do we have anyone online who would like to provide testimony on House Bill 135? Seeing no one. Seeing no one else, I'm closing public testimony on House Bill 135. With that, before we seek the will of the committee, are there any additional questions for members, for the resolution sponsor, or staff? Very well. What is the will of the committee regarding House Bill 135?
Mr. Chairman, I move House Bill 135, Work Order 33LS0671B, out of committee with zero fiscal note and individual recommendations.
Thank you, Representative Wright. Without objection, House Bill 135 moves out of House State Affairs with attached zero fiscal note and individual recommendations. Are there any final comments or thoughts from the bill sponsor? Seeing none.
Chairman, I think that says it all.
Thank you. At this time, we'll take a brief at ease to sign the bill paperwork and to prepare for our next item of business. Back on the record, our second order of business today is House Bill Number 1, an act relating to elections, sponsored by Representative Rauscher. It's the first hearing for this bill. It's our intention today to hear the initial presentation of the bill from the bill sponsor, to hear invited testimony, and then hold the bill over. We will not be taking public testimony on House Bill 1 at today's hearing. I will note that the topic of this legislation is the repeal of Ballot Measure 2, and I expect that will generate a significant amount of discussion. I will also note that I'm aware of ballot measures going through the petition process, and I want to be clear. This is not the venue for discussion of any potential ballot measures. The proposal before us is House Bill 1 and only House Bill 1. I ask that all presenters keep their comments limited to this proposal, and I thank the committee and the presenters in advance. Representative Rauscher and his staff, Ryan McKee, are here to present the bill. Representative Rauscher, Mr. McKee, could you please come to the podium, place yourself on the record, and begin your presentation.
For the record, my name is Representative George Rauscher, District 29, and I'd like to thank House State Affairs Committee Chair Shaw and the members of the committee for hearing HB 1. HB 1 repeals ranked choice voting and returns us to a state where the state previously ran elections. Ranked choice voting, which was first used in 2022 elections, was narrowly approved by voters in the 2020 election. That ballot measure was sponsored mostly entirely by money from special interest groups outside of Alaska. Petitions for ballot measures are not only required to gather signatures from 10% of the previous election's total voter turnout, the timing Ballot Measure 2 petition was such that it was first used in 2022 elections. Following the 2022 election cycle, there has been an enormous outcry to repeal it. Many of the complaints were centered around confusion, not understanding the process, not knowing how to support their candidate in a ranked choice environment, scared to vote incorrectly and risk hurting their candidates' chances to win. Open primaries, also referred to as jungle primaries. As you will hear during this committee hearing, the list describing the problems with the present election system is long and quite arduous presentation needed. While there are other aspects to full ballot measure two, there are some items that should stay in effect, and those are those that the courts have ruled unconstitutional. And if they were to be changed back to the original content. So also there are other portions of this ballot measure that keep the dark money out of our election process, which are intentionally left out at this time. And presently this election only affects ranked choice and open primaries part of the new law. I would like to also state before I move on is the difference. And I noticed previously stated that this is about ranked choice voting and the repeal. This is not about the petition process, but I will say that the petition process would come into effect during the next election. If this legislation was passed, it should take effect before the next election process. So there is a difference for why this is being heard today and why there is a petition process out there should this not pass. So right now I would like to turn your attention to my chief of staff, Ryan McKee, for the sectional analysis.
All right, for the record, Ryan McKee, staff to Representative George Rauscher. Section 1 deletes language related to ranked choice voting and amends the language relating to the appointment of election supervisors. Under amended language, a supervisor will be appointed based on the top two votes statewide in the most recent gubernatorial election, or they may be appointed by the election supervisor if a member of either party is not available. Section 2 amends language related to the appointment of election watchers, clarifying the process for precinct party committees when appointing watchers. Section 3 modifies the appointment of members of the Alaska Public Office Commissions, also known as APOC, to be from the top two vote-gaining parties from the most recent gubernatorial election, deleting references to political groups. Section 4 deletes references to political groups as it relates to APOC. Section 5 amends this section by deleting references to ranked choice voting elections. Section 6 amends language relating to the filing of campaign reports, adding a new section to include individuals who filed a nominating petition to become a candidate, and renumbers the following sections. Section 7 amends the statute reference to reelect changes made in bill. Section 8 modifies the definition of contributions to not include mailings describing the political party's slate of candidates. Section 9 deletes language relating to ranked choice voting and amends the section requiring ballots to include the political party of candidates. Section 10 deletes language relating to ranked choice voting, adds a new section relating to the counting of votes, and renumbers the following sections. Section 11 deletes references to ranked choice voting in the certification of ballot counts. Section 12 amends language to reflect context of bill. Section 13 amends language for absentee voting, clarifying that only the voter of the voter's designee may mark the absentee ballot application. Section 14 amends language to include special runoff elections. Section 15 deletes language related to ranked choice voting and amends the language relating to the appointment of the district counting board. Under amended language, a board member will be appointed based on the top two votes statewide in the most recent gubernatorial election. Section 16 through 21 amends language to include special runoff elections. Section 22 amends language to include the traditional primary election and deletes references to ranked choice voting. Section 23 inserts a new section related to the participation in primary election selection of a political party's candidate. Section 24 deletes reference to ranked choice voting and requires the inclusion of the name of the political party affiliation of each candidate. Section 25 adds a new section addressing how a party may nominate a new candidate should an incumbent become disqualified, incapacitated, or dies. Section 26, this section is repealed and reenacted to establish the preparation and distribution of ballots, minus language for ranked choice voting. Section 27, this section is repealed and enacted to establish how nominees are placed on the general election ballot. Section 28 amends the section requiring the Director of Elections to include the full name and political party of a candidate on the general election ballot. Section 29 amended to require that both a write-in candidate for governor and lieutenant governor to be of the same political party or group. Section 30 adds new sections establishing the process for filling vacancies by party petition if a candidate dies, withdraws, resigns, or becomes disqualified from holding office. Section 31 adds new section to Article 2 establishing the process for nominating no party candidates for political office, including the requirements for filing petitions, form of the petition, and the required number of signatures for both statewide and district-wide offices. Section 32 deletes reference to ranked choice voting from the sections. Section 33 deletes language related to the ranked choice voting and makes conforming amendments to the bill. Section 34 adds a new section establishing the procedures for calling a special election or a special runoff election. Section 35 adds a new section establishing the procedures for calling a special within the primary. Section 36 amends the requirements for the governor issuing a proclamation for a special runoff election. Section 37 and 38 make conforming changes to allow for special runoff elections for U.S. Senator and the U.S. Representative. Section 39 amends the section by adding the required percentage of qualified votes for a no-party candidates to appear on the general election ballot. Section 40 adds new sections establishing requirements for party petition and selections of party nominees. Section 41 makes conforming amendments to the previous for conduction of special elections and special runoff elections. Section 42 makes conforming amendments to the conditions and time of calling special elections and special runoff elections. Section 43 makes conforming amendments to the conditions holding special elections and special runoff elections. Section 44 makes conforming amendments to the proclamation of a special election by the governor. Section 45 makes conforming amendments to the petition requirements of a no-party candidate for a special election. Section 46 adds a new section establishing the requirements of party petition and selections of party nominations for a special election. Section 47 makes conforming amendments to the general provisions for conducting special elections. Section 48 makes conforming amendments to the qualifications and confirmations of an appointee to the state legislature following appointment to office. Section 49 deletes language related to ranked choice voting as it relates to filling a vacancy or a part-term Senate appointee or special election. Section 50 and 51 make conforming amendment related to the date and proclamation of special elections to fill a vacant state Senate seat. Section 52 makes conforming amendments to the petition requirements of a no-party candidate for a special election to fill a vacant state Senate seat. Section 53 adds a new section establishing the requirements of a party petition and selections of party nominations for a special election to fill a vacant state Senate seat. Section 54 makes conforming amendments to the general provisions for conducting special elections to fill a vacant state Senate seat. Sections 55 to 56 make conforming amendments to sections relating to placing propositions on the ballot. Sections 57, 58, and 59 make conforming amendments to sections relating to the publication of official election pamphlets. Section 60 makes conforming amendments to the definition of a federal election and deletes language related to ranked choice voting. Section 61 makes conforming amendments to the public office financial disclosure report. And Section 62 repeals statutes relating to ranked choice voting. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Roucher and Mr. McKee, for your overview. Do the members have any questions for the bill sponsor? Representative Carpenter.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So after that lengthy explanation, is the end result with this bill a return to the statutes as they existed prior to the ballot measure's passage?
Through the chair, Representative Carpenter, yes.
Thank you. No additional questions from the committee? That brings us to invited testimony. Looks like we may have everybody. Julie Lucky from Alaskans for Better Elections, Kelly Chewbacca from Preserve Democracy, and Phil Eisen from Alaskans for Honest Elections. I would like to note that we're somewhat pressed for time, so I'd ask that each presenter, if they could, limit their testimony to no longer than 10 minutes, which is 8 minutes longer than we normally give. With that, Ms. Lucky, we welcome you to House State Affairs. If you would come forward, put yourself on the record, give us your affiliation, and begin your testimony. Could I get a brief at ease? Back on the record. Ms. Lucky.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Chair Shaw and members of the House State Affairs Committee. I appreciate the opportunity to present on House Bill 1. My name is Julie Lucky, and I am the Executive Director of Alaskans for Better Elections. And I just want to be very clear that while I respect Representative Rauscher and their presentation here, we do oppose House Bill 1 and would like to see the current election system stay in place. So I just want to be very clear off the bat. Alaskans for Better Elections advocated for ballot measure 2 in the 2020 election cycle, and then in the last few years have focused on education for voters and assisting with implementation. This year, of course, we oppose the repeal of the election system as it stands today, and will continue our education efforts. The first thing I'd like to do is thank the legislature for its commitment and Division of Elections commitment for having a successful implementation last year. The legislature did approve a lot of funding, and the Division of Elections did a great job of making sure that all of the ballots were designed in a way that were easy for most voters to understand and put a lot of effort into educating voters. The ballot measure 2 reform is a voter-centric reform. We feel it returns power and choice to voters in order to make elected officials more accountable to their constituents. That is the main point of the reform is to be voter-centric and allow voters to have a voice in every step of the process. So some of the benefits are fewer barriers to entry for the citizen legislature. As you know, this is a citizen legislature, so it does remove barriers to entry for people to run for office. It increases competition in the general election where more voters participate. And we'll talk a little bit about how that system goes forth, but I just wanted to do a brief overview of the benefits ahead of time. Candidate will need broad support to win. It encourages candidates to talk to a larger percentage of their constituency and elects representatives that are more accountable to their constituents. And that's due to the majority requirement for ranked choice voting. In order to win, it's not just a plurality first past the post. You need to get a 50% plus one majority to win, or else the rounds go to tabulation. Research showed there's a larger, more diverse candidate pool in 2022. We had the highest number of women candidates in recent history, and the candidates were more politically diverse. 40% of statewide races had more than two candidates, compared to 20% of races in 2020. Right. Benefits allows candidates with similar ideologies to compete in the same election without splitting the vote and letting a less popular candidate win with the plurality. So the way that the system works, the way that the system works, it's a two-part system. So it's not just about ranked choice voting. The system starts with the open primary, which allows all candidates to appear on one ballot and allows every voter to choose from any candidate on that ballot. Every voter for that district gets the same ballot and can choose from any candidate. And then it moves on with the top four vote getters moving on to the general election. And so you'll see that candidates, we could have two Republicans moving on to the general election, two Democrats, two independents, or a mixture thereof. And what it's doing is allowing those candidates that are the most competitive to voters to move on to that general election. And then for the general election, it allows voters to rank in order of preference. Okay. So it does provide for more choices for voters at the higher turnout general election. And we did see that in the 2022 elections in Alaska. For example, in Senate District O, which Senator Schauer won that election, I looked back at the rates, the competitiveness from 2024, and obviously district lines have changed in that time. But over the previous two decades, the closest margin in a general election in that district was 29%, with most races being an average of 45% split between the first and the second candidate. This year's election was very competitive in the general election, with only 684 votes separating the candidates, which is a less than 5% less than 5% margin between the candidates. Parties still play a pivotal role by endorsing and financially supporting candidates. and the party's endorsements still matter. Okay, what changed in 2022? So all statewide elections now follow the same two-step process. So the previous, in the previous election system, the special elections were a different process, and then the regular elections followed a primary to a general election. And now all statewide elections will follow the same two-step process, which will be step one, a nonpartisan or open primary, where, again, all candidates appear on the same ballot.
And so could I bother you? We should like to take a real quick brevity, if you don't mind. Back on the record, our apologies. Continue.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So all candidates will appear on the same ballot, and all voters get to choose among all the candidates on the ballot, with the top four vote getters moving on to the general election. Unaffiliated voters don't have to choose a ballot and limit their choices, and 58% of Alaskans are not affiliated with a party. And the most competitive candidates advance, which means the ones that get the most votes advance. Alaska has a long history. Alaska actually has a long history of blanket or open primaries. It was in place when, from statehood until there was a court case that actually required us to close the primaries, and I believe that was in the year 2000. The difference in this system is that the top four vote getters will move on as opposed to the top vote getter in each party. Step two is a ranked choice voting general election where voters rank candidates in order of preference. If a candidate receives a majority, 50% plus one vote, first choice votes, they win. And if not, the candidates with the fewest votes is eliminated, and voters who rank that candidate as their first choice have their vote counted for their next choice. This process will continue until two candidates are left and the one with the most votes wins. In the 2022 elections, 12 of the 62 elections went to tabulation. In the first ranked choice voting election in August, and I know that I don't have to remind anybody else on this committee that we ended up having two elections in 2022, and so the first ranked choice voting election actually happened in August instead of the scheduled time, which would have been November, due to that special election. But in that first ranked choice voting election in August, 99.83% of ballots were correctly filled out, and 73% of voters ranked at least two candidates. In the November election, on the statewide average, because each race, of course, was different, there were multiple ranked choice voting, ranked choice races in November, 99.94% of ballots were correctly filled out. And in addition to just being able to fill out the ranked choice ballots correctly, Alaskan voters showed a more nuanced understanding of how ranked choice voting works, as they were more likely to rank when races were more competitive, in races with multiple candidates, and when their first choice wasn't favored to win. So they... it showed that Alaskans really understood how to use that ballot to show their preferences as opposed to just marking one through four. Ranked choice voting didn't favor one party over another. In the three statewide races where you're looking at the same electorate voting on different races, incumbents were favored to win, but the winners represented different points on the political spectrum. So we had a more conservative Republican, a more moderate Republican, and a Democrat winning from the state, the same electorate. There are more choices for voters, a larger, more diverse candidate pool. Vote splitting was prevented and candidates had majority support. The three come from behind victories show that the system works. And that's when you have, in the districts where they had a couple of candidates that were running that were more politically aligned, and then a third candidate, which might be considered by some to be a spoiler candidate, when the rank, the tabulations were finished, the candidates that represented a majority of that district and had that political alignment with the majority of district won that race. And those were the only three in which a come from behind candidate was where you had two that were politically, more closely politically aligned, and then one that was not. And we'll say Alaskan voters are complex and independent, and the system allows them to express that. There are a few interesting things that we saw in the race. There was 18% of voters crossed party lines in their top two choices, and we saw in the U.S. representative race where Buzz Kelly votes as he was eliminated, 893 ranked Patricia Chesbrough next, and then when Chesbrough was eliminated, 2,209 ranked Shabaka next. So there are things that voters, while we may not see that connection that voters see, voters are complex and independent, so they may not choose to vote just strict on party lines. They might find something in a candidate that they like, and that they would vote for that person as their second choice. I think that is. I tried to be quick, Mr. Chair. Your committee aide did tell me to keep it under 10 minutes, so that is all of the slides I have, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Are there any questions from committee members? Thank you for your testimony.
Yes.
Representative Carpenter.
Mr. Chair, thank you. I didn't want to steal somebody else's thunder right off the bat. Okay, so back at the beginning of the presentation, I appreciate you going through it quickly. Did a good job. And I didn't write down what slide number it was, so bear with me. The question I have was regarding the statement that you made that ballots were easy to understand. And I'm wanting to know, that sounds like an opinion statement. Do you have data to support that that the voters believe that it was easy to understand?
Through the chair, Representative Carpenter, I tried to keep the presentation I did today to the facts, and the fact that we used to back that up is the fact that more than 99% of the ballots in one election and 98% of the ballots in the other election were filled out correctly. We did do some polling. I did not put that information in here. Thought that this committee would prefer to just see kind of the facts that came from the actual Alaska experience. But our polling did show that the majority of Alaskans reported that it was simple to do when we did exit polls right after the August and the November elections. And I'm happy to provide that data to the committee.
Follow up.
Thank you for that answer. I'm not sure that voters being able to color in bubbles means that it was necessarily filled out correctly. So how does your organization, or how do you define what correctly is?
Through the chair, Representative Carpenter, what I was referring to when I said correctly is that it was filled out, the ballots were actually valid ballots. So they were actually, you know, one per column, or they weren't filled out in a way that would cause the ballots to be rejected. One of the things that we did find out from when the elections are done, there's the CVR cast vote record, and that has kind of a record of all of the votes. And there are people that can do the analysis of those records. And that's what I had talked to about a previous slide, is that you saw a higher level of ranking when races were more competitive, and more ranking when the first candidate ranked wasn't was kind of an underdog candidate or wasn't favored to win. That does show that voters do understand how to use that ranking. The fact that there's a higher percentage of people ranking when the ranking is kind of going to be more powerful in a race where there are more candidates for race, or in a race where your first pick might not be the one that makes it to the final two.
Follow up.
Thank you. I'm not sure I followed that, and I'm not going to ask you to repeat it. I can go back and watch the recording here. And I guess I would just like to say that that kind of sums up my thinking about right choice voting, is that when I spent a lot of time communicating to voters prior to the election, it was a very complex subject to have to communicate to people. And so a statement that says everybody understood because they filled out bubbles, to me, does not capture the essence of the communication that I had prior to the election. I guess I would like to ask, how many races were impacted by voters exercising their right to not rank, meaning they just voted once and they said, I'm not going to participate in the ranked choice voting piece of this. I just cast my ballot for the first round and I didn't cast vote for in subsequent rounds. How many of the races were impacted by that decision?
And through the chair, Representative Carpenter, I'm not sure I understand the question in the sense that I can get the data. I did not get the data for how many, and I'm happy to provide that to the committee. I don't have the data right on me about how many of the 62 races had, you know, various drop-offs. And I guess the question would be, I'm happy to follow up with your office so I can provide you the data that you want. I would say that in every race, there's going to be people who express their preference for one candidate and don't express their preference for additional candidates. We see in every election where candidates will not choose to vote for a race, like they might just choose the Senate race. I can provide that data as well. It's kind of a similar concept, is I might vote for the races that I care about, but maybe leave one or two off, in the same way that a person could choose to vote for a candidate and not choose to exercise their preference among the remaining candidates.
Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Follow up.
So, and I think we have a longstanding tradition in the United States that we can go to the ballot box and we don't have to vote for every candidate or every race. Mm-hmm. We can choose not to vote. And in that context, when someone goes into a ranked choice voting race in this last election and they chose not to vote in the second, third, or fourth rounds, their ballot was exhausted. So what I'm asking, and I'm rephrasing the question that I asked earlier, how many races were impacted because of exhausted ballots, where somebody said, I am choosing to vote in the first round, and either I don't understand or choose not to participate in the ranked choice voting piece of this, and that choice impacted the outcome of the election?
Through the chair, Representative Carpenter, I do understand your question, and I'll try to provide the data to answer your concerns on that.
Representative Allard.
Thank you, Chair, and through the chair, thank you for being here today. Kind of to follow up with Representative Carpenter's questions, one would be, I've heard a lot of not happiness with this type of voting system. So again, could you provide the numbers of how many people just filled in the same person all the way down?
Through the chair, Representative Allard, those would be spoiled ballots, and I can find out. Those are called overvotes. I don't have the overvote information for all the 62 races in the general. I will say that in the first election in August, when there was only one, it was 342 overvotes.
Okay. So, and then you can produce that data for that, where you got the information, your source, all the information on that?
Through the chair, Representative Allard, that comes directly from Division of Elections.
Okay. So then how many were there of just incorrect ballots then? Because it's almost 100%. I find that unusual, that 100% of the ballots were done correctly first time voting. So I would be curious on how many voted, how many ballots were done incorrectly for the entire state of Alaska in August, and how many were done incorrectly for the primary in November, and how many were tossed out, like the whole, not just the correct ballots, but I want to go the reverse.
And through the chair, Representative Allard, there are many reasons that ballots can be invalidated. I will check in with the Division of Elections. There were invalidated ballots. So we can definitely ask for the breakdown of which ones were simply overvotes from ranked choice voting election. I do know that in the previous election, there were a number of ballots that were not in the mailed ballots that were not witnessed, and those were thrown out. I think it was roughly 7,000. And I'm happy to provide that data as well. There were problems with, I believe, some of the some of the ballots that people had to vote.
I'm sorry. I'm just through the chair. Are you referencing another election? Or are you referencing just ranked choice voting right now?
Through the chair, Representative Allard, I'm referencing the 2022 election cycle. So it was during the elections where ranked choice voting was in effect.
Okay, and.
And Mr. Chairman, Representative Allard, I have a lot of respect for I've worked in the building for many years until I didn't, and I have a lot of respect for the legislative record. And so I wouldn't want to have a lot of conjecture on, since there were 62 races. I do know about the August race, but I'm happy to provide that as follow up to the committee. But I'd like to get that information directly from Division of Elections to ensure it's correct.
Thank you. Fair enough. And can I just do a quick follow up?
Quick, please.
Okay. I'll refrain.
Okay.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you. Appreciate it.
We are a little bit limited on time. Have any other short questions? Because Ms. Chewbacca has to be off by 4 o'clock. Well, we're lucky to have you, Ms. Lucky. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee.
Thank you. Brief at ease. Back on the record. Kelly Chewbacca from Preserve Democracy. Ms. Chewbacca, welcome to State Affairs. If you'd like to put yourself on the record, give us your affiliation and provide your testimony. Nice to have you back.
Thanks for having me. I'm Kelly Chewbacca, CEO of Preserve Democracy. I want to thank you so much, Chair Shaw and Vice Chair Wright, Co-Chair Wright, members of the committee. Thanks for having me. I'm here to testify in support of HB1, an act relating to elections that would repeal ballot measure 2 and ranked choice voting. Thank you also to Representative Rauscher and his chief of staff for helping with slides today. So let's go to the next slide. What we're going to cover today is the threat that ranked choice voting is. It's an emerging threat to our election system. It causes voter suppression, increased negativity and costs in campaigns, distrust in the election system, risk to the democratic legitimacy of election outcomes, increased vulnerability to dark money, fewer candidate choices, and more extreme candidates being elected. Next slide, please. We'll start with voter suppression. In 2022, Alaska had record low voter turnout. The lowest voter turnout in state history occurred the very year that we introduced ranked choice voting. Our turnout was 44.4%, down 5% from our last non-presidential election, and 56.8% in the one before that. So you can see we're dropping about 10 or 12% from that election. It's 18,000 fewer voters from those last two elections. What's even more remarkable is we know that we have voter drop-off as you go down ballot, but we actually had the reverse happen in our ranked choice voting. We had even fewer voters participate at the top of the ballot elections. 40% of Alaskans voted in the Senate and House races for U.S. Senate and U.S. House in 2022, which means that that was 10% fewer of our voters voting for our U.S. Senate and U.S. House races in 2022 than we had voting in 2018. That is a huge amount of voter drop-off. In our next slide, you can see a voter chart showing that 44.4%. If we dropped it for U.S. Senate and House races, it would drop measurably compared to all of the years that the Division of Elections has been tracking voter participation rate in Alaska. The one thing that changed for Alaska last year was ranked choice voting. Please note that we have to ask an important question. Were we different from the rest of the United States? And the answer is yes. The rest of the United States saw one of the highest voter turnouts it has had in national history. Some states seeing the highest voter turnout rate that they've ever had. So we definitely were the anomaly. Let's go to the next slide. Here's the ACLU's testimony about ranked choice voting. They say ranked choice ballots have suppressed voter turnout, resulting in decreased turnouts up to 8% in non-presidential elections, similar to what we saw in Alaska. Our ranked choice voting exacerbates economic and racial disparities in voting. Voting errors and spoiled ballots occur far more often. They gave the example that in Minneapolis, nearly 10% of ranked choice ballots were not counted, most of these in low-income communities of color. We'll go to the next slide, please. Here's a quote from the New York Post and from the Amsterdam News, both of these from Hazel Dukes, who's the president of the New York chapter of the NAACP, which happens to be a more liberal organization. She says, ranked choice voting is not beneficial to minorities. It's voter suppression. I hope that the courts see that ranked choice voting is not right for democracy. And then later she says, let there be no doubt that we are seeing renewed systematic and racist efforts to restrict the ability of Black voters to exercise the right for which so many have died. I'm deeply concerned that the imposition of ranked choice voting will disproportionately discourage Black and Latino voters from full participation. Voter suppression comes in many forms. She is a big opponent of ranked choice voting on these grounds. Next slide. Ranked choice voting also creates increased negativity and costs. The Bangor Daily News wrote this article after empirical evidence showed that Maine's U.S. Senate race was the most negative one in the country in 2020. When they were using ranked choice voting, the race also, quote, set records as the most expensive one in Maine's history because of ranked choice voting. Of course, I'm sure that we all have our own opinions about how negative and expensive the 2022 race was in Alaska, but I'll move on. Ranked choice voting also creates distrust. On our next slide, we have this interesting case study that's happening in Alameda County outside of San Francisco. Right now, they have a tallying error in their ranked choice voting for the school board. It turns out that after the election was certified, there was an error that was found. The certified third place candidate, the person who came in third place in the election, ultimately was declared the actual winner. So after the election was certified, the registrar of voters learned that its ranked choice voting system was not configured properly. Why? Because this organization called Fair Vote, which is a special interest funded organization that has advocated for the spread of ranked choice voting for decades, They came in and said, oh, we don't think that your algorithms were right. They reprogrammed the ranked choice voting system, and the election results were rerun, making the third place candidate the first place candidate. Unfortunately, the election results were already certified, and so it had to go to court. The court came to a different conclusion and said the third place candidate was the winner. This was only resolved 2 weeks ago. The school board is still in disarray and does not have a full school board complement met months after the election. Ultimately, the county decided to do a recount of every single ranked choice voting race because they don't trust the process. And here's a great quote that the San Francisco Chronicle used in its article. It really feeds into the distrust. It really feeds into the distrust so many people have in our election system when this sort of thing happens. Here on our next slide is a fascinating journal article from 2014 in the Journal of Electoral Studies. We've heard about how ranked choice voting leads to this issue where the candidate who wins always has a majority, a 50% majority. This study shows that that's a complete myth. The myth is lower ranked candidates are redistributed until a candidate with 50% or more of the vote always wins. A majority person always wins. That is not true. In fact, what happens is they studied four jurisdictions using ranked choice voting. None of the final winners actually received any more than 40% of the original vote share because over 27% of the ballots originally cast were thrown out as the ranked choice voting rounds progressed. And so the study ultimately concluded that ranked choice voting increases the difficulty of the task facing voters. And a substantial number of voters either cannot or choose not to rank multiple candidates. Even the people who mark three distinct choices often face the prospect of exhaustion. So education alone does not fix the problem. They found that education did not actually fix anything. This was a really important final point in this study. The possibility that exhaustion might tip the balance in the final round poses, quote, a serious risk to the democratic legitimacy of the method and the outcomes that ranked choice produces. On the next slide, we have the number 75 that really stands out in our 2002 election, showing us that ranked choice voting caters to dark money. In 2022, 75 candidates in Alaska ran for our three statewide offices, U.S. Senate, U.S. House, and the governor's race. With Alaska's ranked choice voting related open primary system, the burden was then placed on each and every voter to research every candidate's individual background and platform in order to make an informed decision, which of course is a nearly impossible task. And so what happened is those candidates, those incumbents with the most money and of course the most dark money, they had the greater advantage, much more so than in a normal election. And ultimately it was the incumbents who won all three of those races, U.S. Senate, U.S. House, and the governor's race. And this is why. We'll go to the next one. Next slide. Ranked choice voting also limits our choices, despite some of the other news that we've heard. In 2020, we had six third-party candidates on our general election ballot for federal offices in Alaska. This did not include Al Gross, who was our candidate for U.S. Senate. He ran as an independent, but on our ballot, he was actually labeled as a Democrat, so I don't include him. If we include him, we would have had seven third-party candidates. But in 2022, there was only one third-party candidate who was able to make it through our new ranked choice voting-related open primary system to the general election for federal office. And that person only made it onto the top four because another candidate dropped off. What this means is that ranked choice voting significantly limits the ability of independents and libertarians, the Alaska Independent Party, and our other third-party candidates from making it into the general election. There's this really wide open door for people to throw their name into the ring. But the fact is, when it comes to a November election, there are very, very few people who can make it to the final ballot. And I think that that has something to do with why we had low voter turnout. Our candidates in the general election didn't really represent all of Alaska. Our next slide. Ranked choice voting also eliminates moderates, contrary to some of the things that we've heard. In Alaska's 2022 U.S. House race, Democrats forced out a moderate independent candidate, Al Gross, who previously ran as their Democrat candidate for U.S. Senate in 2020. Sorry, the date's all wrong on the slide. This left only one remaining Democrat in the final four general election, Mary Pultola, who held far more extreme political views than Al Gross. So this pushed us towards a more extreme candidate. Similarly, a moderate Alaska Native Republican dropped out of the final four in the U.S. House race after she determined she had no path to victory to win the election. A less moderate candidate took the fourth spot on the ballot. So in both of those situations, ranked choice voting pushed us towards less moderate candidates. On our next slide, we see that there's been bipartisan opposition to ranked choice voting. Here in Alaska, both U.S. Senator Mark Begich, Democrat from Alaska, and our former Governor Sean Parnell, Republican, they teamed up on an article in 2020 saying that ranked choice voting is a confusing new system that encourages political trickery, and Alaskans shouldn't have to doubt that their votes count. And then if we go down to California, we know that Governor Gavin Newsom, who's a Democrat, he vetoed a bill that was going to implement ranked choice voting statewide, saying he was very concerned that ranked choice voting led to voter confusion, that the cure being proposed for low voter turnout is far worse than the disease. We do not believe that the board should be experimenting with San Francisco's hard-fought right to vote. Primaries and runoff elections have served our nation well for most of its history. Go to a next slide, just to give you an update on where we are with ranked choice voting across the country. States are starting to ban ranked choice voting because they've become aware of some of the things I've showed you today. Tennessee, Florida, and South Dakota have just done this recently, and Idaho is proposing it now in their legislative session. And finally, Alaskans want to repeal ranked choice voting on this last slide. There was recently a poll done by Alaska Survey Research and Ivan Moore in January 2023, right after our 2022 election. 53% of Alaskans, including your constituents, want ranked choice voting repealed. That was about 1,400 registered Alaskan voters. And Ivan Moore commented on Twitter, "Everyone who follows me knows that I'm a huge supporter of ranked choice voting, but these numbers show the reality. The original passage of ranked choice voting was by a very narrow margin, and any idea that, quote, once we have a RCV election, everyone will love it, is just not the case." So the concluding slide sums it all up. Passing HB1 will prevent voter suppression, increase negativity and costs in campaigns, distrust in our election system, risk to the democratic legitimacy of our election outcomes, increase vulnerability to dark money, fewer candidate choices, and more extreme candidates from being elected. Thank you for your time. I'm happy to take any questions you might have.
Thank you, Ms. Chewbacca. Any questions from committee members? Representative Armstrong.
Thank you, Ms. Chewbacca. Through the chair, on your slide where you say ranked choice voting caters to dark money, it says that those with the most money have the greatest advantage, yet Pultola was outspent 10-1 in the general election with zero independent expenditure support. Begich and Palin outraced her and had significant outside support from the NRCC and Rand Paul Super PAC. She leapfrogged four candidates who outraced her. She was significantly outspent with no six-figure IE, and so I just wanted to figure out where you got your information for this slide because it doesn't match up with my facts. And then just a quick follow-on, you say that she was a far more extreme political candidate than Al Gross. Could you enumerate what policies were more extreme as compared to Al Gross? Thank you.
Yes, absolutely. Thanks. So on the first part, NRCC, I know, spent money in the special election for Congress, but when it came to the general election, we know that Mary Pultola spent around $6 million, but had up to $10 million just for her own personal expenditures. Nick Begich had about $1 million, and so did Sarah in their campaigns, but NRCC did not come in and endorse either of them or support them in a big financial way. And so those were some of the major spending discrepancies that we saw between August and October because of the incumbency advantage. When it comes to the Al Gross versus Mary Pultola differences, some of those are in things like the votes that we're seeing now, where Mary Pultola voted, for example, for abortion of a child who's on a table, a patient table separate from their mother after birth. That's not Al Gross's position, and that was some of the things that were coming out in their respective campaigns.
Representative Carpenter.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Question that I will pose to you, Mr. Bakken, thanks for being here. I'm concerned about the argument that the two-party system is really what's the problem within our political system, and that we needed ranked choice voting in order to level the playing field Could you speak to which organizations supported candidates in the election, maybe nationally, that aren't affiliated with a legal political party within the state of Alaska?
Through the chair, Representative Carpenter, you're asking like IEs or groups that are not affiliated with the political party that supported different candidates in our 2022 election?
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am.
Yes. So I was aware of different, for example, climate activist groups that were supporting candidates in our different elections, environmentalist groups. They're not affiliated with a party one way or another that were supporting candidates in our elections, special interest groups in that kind of way. People who had different causes along those lines. We had pro-life and pro-choice groups. Those aren't necessarily related to parties, but they were definitely heavily involved. I read about groups coming up and knocking doors that, of course, did not even endorse or support candidates, but were maybe even opposed to other candidates because of different positions. And they're not allowed to coordinate with parties or with candidates, but they were very heavily involved in Alaska in 2022.
Follow-up question. Follow up.
So I would pose the same question regarding the proponents of the original ballot measure 2. If it's not a political party that was promoting ballot measure 2, what organizations were promoting ballot measure 2?
So my understanding, through the chair, my understanding, Representative Carpenter, they have those organizations listed on the ballot measure 2 website, and there are three major groups from the lower 48. They tend to be organizations that lean towards the left, but that information's all been publicly disclosed on their website.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Representative Story.
Thank you, Chair Shaw, and welcome, Ms. Chewbacca. It's good to see you. In the presentation, you talked about the states that were not going towards ranked choice voting, but there are many states who are turning towards ranked choice voting. Do you have a list of those states?
Through the chair, Representative Story, yes, I do. There are 31 states that have used ranked choice voting in some form or another. Some of them have stepped back. Some of their counties or cities have stepped back and repealed it after they experimented with it. But in some way, shape, or form, 31 states have tried it, either in party primaries or in absentee ballots or in overseas ballots for military use. I can provide that list to the committee.
Thank you. And through the chair, I know that there's many municipalities and, as you said, school boards who are looking at this. I had just another question, and that had to do with the data on voter turnout. And as we all know, we really want to encourage voter turnout. And I saw an interesting article that the Pew Research Center just recently said that voter turnout was down nationwide. And have you looked at any correlation with Alaska's elections compared to national? And I hope it's, some people are saying it has to do with how divisive elections have gotten. And I didn't know if you had any facts on that.
Through the chair, the articles I read and the study that I saw that came out of Harvard showed that that nationwide voter turnout was up, except in the states where we had toss-up seats or extremely contentious races, then we had more strained voter turnout. But collectively, the lower 48 saw higher voter turnout. I'd be interested to see what the Pew Research poll showed and how that was different from the reports immediately after the election in all of our mainstream news outlets and with the Harvard report.
Follow up.
Yes,
thank you. I'd be happy to share that with you.
Thank you. Good to see you, too.
Any additional questions from committee members? Seeing none. Kelly, it's very nice to see you again. Thank you so much for your presentation, and we wish you all the best.
Thank you, Chair Shaw. Have a great day.
Thank you. Next, we have Phil Eisen from the Alaskans for Honest Elections. Welcome to the House State Affairs, Mr. Eisen. If you'd like to put yourself on the record and begin your testimony.
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Thank you.
Okay, perfect. So just real quick, it seems that my PowerPoint presentation did not come through. And it's kind of a good thing because I didn't know Kelly was going to be here. So I was able to kind of reorganize my presentation while she was talking. So that way I could get this on a little bit, you know, so I don't recover the same things that she did. She covered some great points, though. You know, one in particular I just want to start off with is the same presentation I did the debate against the Alaskans for Better Elections debate discussion at the Captain Cook Hotel. And it's a much more thorough presentation. It's on our website, and you can welcome to watch both sides if you want to see both sides type of environment. Like I said, my slideshows and presentation are in that and on those videos if you want to watch them. But first thing I just want to talk about is how ranked choice voting is not, it's not better, it's not faster, it's not cheaper, and it did not increase voter turnout. Representative Story had mentioned that the voter turnout is very important. I agree. I think that a unity project like this, around ranked choice voting, having conversations around these topics is important. And so when we're looking at low voter turnout, we have the lowest voter turnout by percentage in the entire history of our state in 2022. That's proven. I've proven it many, many times over with many different people. Happy to provide the data to prove that as well. That is a major flaw. That tells us that there's something wrong, irregardless of what other states are doing. Faster either. We were last in the whole country for regular election results. You know, that's a major flaw. So that's something we need to address. And, you know, obviously ranked choice voting didn't provide that. And these are what I'm saying. Why I say this is the better their organization's called Alaskans for Better Elections. I say cheaper because they claim nationally that ranked choice voting cheaper alternative than traditional elections. I say, you know, faster because they say it's faster than traditional elections. And then, you know, of course, they claim that they increased turnout, which they didn't do. So that's major issues. One of the other things I'd like to address, and I know this, you know, it's just more has to do with the money situation because one of the representatives brought it up. I didn't have it in my presentation, but I'm going to address it anyway. It's, you know, $6 million, and that's from the Federalist article of 2023, February. $6.1 million came from outside of Alaska to fund Alaskans for Better Elections, and they only raised $20,000 from in-state. So that's another major issue. We've raised way more than that from Alaska, Alaskans to do the alternative. Not going to talk too much about it, but my point is that obviously there was outside money funding the very organization that was promoting getting rid of dark money. When we talk about the leadership, you know, nationwide, she mentioned an NAACP. I addressed that in my presentation. That NAACP article is fantastic. There's another one that happened in Oakland. She did bring up the registrar point, but there was another NAACP quote said that because some voters may have been confused by the ranked choice ballot. That was March 15th, 2023. And that's the registrar's mistake fueled distrust in the results, boosted calls in Oakland. The other problem with that Oakland one is that, you know, they asked for a recount as of December because of these, that was before they even found out about it. They said, you know, we want to recalculate this before they even knew that there was a miscalculation. And in over 2 months later, the recounts haven't been conducted, and the registrar of voters told supervisors Tuesday almost assured never will. And they wanted recounts in four races, not just one school board. They also wanted the Oakland mayor race, too. So that's kind of an issue. And we're not alone. You know, that's one of the things I'm talking about. Unity Project, when you're looking at ranked choice, you know, there's been multiple cities, including Aspen in 2007. 70% of the entire city voted to get ranked choice voting. 65% voted to repeal it after one election cycle. We're not alone in that, you know, maybe we didn't need this. Maybe it doesn't really benefit us. When we're looking at the overall exhausted ballots, you know, getting into my data here, I believe we had I want to cover that the Democrat in the U.S. Senate election, this goes into a major point of another point of ranked choice voting is they claim it limits gamification, which it doesn't. actually. And if you look at the spoiler candidate that Ms. Lucky brought up, the whole spoiler concept, the idea of exhaustive ballots, these are all new terminology in voting, which I have a major issue with. But in the U.S. Senate election, you had three Republicans make it into that into the general, one Democrat. So absolutely no third party representation whatsoever. And so that's a major problem because they say it's better for third parties. Actually, nationally, there's an organization called the Forward Party that is directly associated with Fair Vote, that is heavily associated with Andrew Yang, which are all nationally promoting this in every state. And in that, they say the third party thing. It's not a third party thing. Third parties don't get representation with ranked choice voting, as proven in that U.S. Senate race. And in that same race, and I want to go back to the 2020 U.S. Senate race with Dan Sullivan. And again, this is all because my PowerPoint isn't there. But Dan Sullivan's race, you had a Democrat receive over 40% of the vote. And in the 2020, they received 10% of the vote in that same election. Obviously, the Democrats gamed the system for ranked choice voting to limit Tabaka from being elected. They did not want her to be elected. So they gamed the system. They changed their vote to make sure that they could block Tabaka from making it in. And that's proven. I mean, that's just a data point. You go from 40% of the vote went for a Democrat in one election, and the very and 2 years later, they only get 10%. That's obviously using the changing the playing the game of ranked choice voting to limit a candidate's success, because they knew that their Democrat, if they voted, this is proof, if voted for one candidate in the primary, and so you have the primary, so you get one choice, and then the top four candidates go into the 2022 Senate election. In that, because everybody talks about Palin and Begich, I like to focus on the Senate election because it's even more proof. You look at this 2022 general election. And if you were a Democrat and you voted just for a Democrat and did not vote for Murkowski, your ballot was exhausted. And that same case happened in the U.S. House race where you voted for just Begich and only Begich, your ballot was exhausted. These are facts. These are 100% facts. You can't prove them wrong. Also, my data point on the lowest voter turnout, that's you can't prove that wrong. So, you know, it's not better. It's not cheaper. So the state of Alaska said on the statement of cost on the ballot measure said it was going to cost $150,000 for voter education, and they end up spending, because they came to the legislature, got a special appropriation, they spent $3 million on just voter education after they said that's a 20-time increase in cost. And to point out that, and I know I didn't want to bring up my petition, but I do want to address the fact that because of their miscalculation, I now have a $2.5 million voter
Mr. Isaac, could you just stay on? Could you stay on the ballot, please?
I'm sorry. No, I'm just pointing out that this has relevance because of their voter education piece. And the only reason they increased my voter education is because of the lack of due diligence on their part to make sure that their actual voter education that they put forward was actually applicable and realistic. It was 20 times what they actually said it was going to cost. That's not fair. That's not equitable. You know, it's not realistic. And so it also points that they're not cheaper, too. So they're not cheaper. They're not faster. They're not better. They didn't increase turnout. So overall, it's a failed system and did not do its job here in Alaska. So nationally, these are the things that they say it does. This is what people promoting it say. Also want to point out that this group, Alaskans for Better Elections, is not actively promoting ranked choice voting. They're using open primary language in their advertising. She mentioned open primary in this. If you watch the debate, they also talk about the open primary. It's because ranked choice voting is not a popular term in Alaska. It doesn't poll well, so they know that. So they changed their entire marketing to target the open primary, and that's for that purpose, because it's not popular. People don't like it. And focusing again, it's like if you look at the amount of signatures that we have gathered that on our petition, it would point – I'm not going to say anything else, but point is like it does address a large percentage of the population already. So obviously, it's much more than what their polls and their surveys have produced. So with that, I'm going to end it. But again, please go watch our presentations. This has been going on a major issue across the nation. South Dakota recently banned it. Arizona today just passed a Senate bill to protect the party primaries. It will be on the ballot.
Bryson, are you completing your presentation?
Florida's banned it, and Tennessee has banned it. More states are working on banning it now. So I don't know any other election system that requires a ban, but you know this one is one of those. So I highly recommend that. I'm very supportive of HB1, and if there's any questions, I'm happy to answer them.
Thank you, Mr. Eisen. Mr. Eisen's PowerPoint will be available to committee members after the fact. We will make sure you get that. Are there any questions for Mr. Eisen? Representative Armstrong.
Thank you. Through the chair, every single quote and instance referenced came from the lower 48. It wasn't the Alaska ACLU, but the Kansas ACLU representing or talking about Minneapolis, New York Post, San Francisco. All of the cases of things going wrong were all in the lower 48. What is the relevancy of all of these outsiders commenting? And do you have any examples of any of these issues happening with ranked choice voting in our state? That is my first question. The second, there was a lot of information given, I think, about Kelly and other races. I just wanted to point out 86% of first choice votes in Ms. Shabaka's election were for the top two finishers. And then in regards to all the talk around exhausted ballots, if every single exhausted ballot did rank choice, it still would have not changed the outcome of the race. Ms. Shabaka still would have lost by a significant margin. So I'm looking at data directly from the Division of Elections, and I just really encourage everyone else to look at actually how people voted and how this shook out, because I really believe voters were well represented here. But if you could help me understand the relevancy of all of these lower 48 outside folks, I'd appreciate that.
I'm not really sure what your question is there. Can you put it in a question format?
What is the relevancy of the ACLU from Kansas? What is the relevancy of the San Francisco Chronicle? What is the relevancy of all of these? Not a single representative from or a single person from Alaska was referenced. Not a single instance of ranked choice voting caught. You're representing chaos with ranked choice voting. We didn't see that here. And so what is the relevancy of bringing up the issues in other places? Alaska is unique. We're proud to be unique, and we don't like outsiders telling us how to do things. We did it well.
Doesn't help me with the question.
Just trying to understand why it's being brought up.
Question format, yeah. Through the chair, just do my best to address your question because I'm still not really clear on what the question is. But the point of it is I did address the lowest voter turnout in the history of our state. That is a major problem with, and this was the first year that we used ranked choice voting. I use these examples to prove that I wasn't trying to rehash the things that Kelly has already brought up. And so she brought up some great points, and I don't need to re-bring those up. Point out, though, I'm glad you mentioned that the two top vote getters, but you didn't mention that two top vote getters were both Republicans, which shouldn't have happened. So if it was a close primary, that wouldn't have happened, and a Republican definitely would have won. Who knows who would that have been with the, with that. And so I'm not going to speculate. But the point of that is that, yes, you did have two top vote getters get 86% of the vote, and they're both Republicans, which and most people would think that was a major flaw. And then other than that, I mean, there's the lower voter turnout and just the amount of people that I've individually spoke to that have felt, including my grandfather, who's 83, I believe, and he's ran a construction company in Alaska for 30 years now, and it's out of business now, but he did millions of dollars of work for the state, millions of dollars of work for the federal government, and he had a really major difficulty filling out his ballot. I'm actually the one that wrote the bill to repeal it. So, and I did that primarily for my grandfather. So I actually have individuals that I am inspired enough to do what I'm doing today because of the flaws of ranked choice voting and the individual complexities that people had in their voting. And so that's why I'm here. And so I get that you want to try to say that my references don't have anything to do with it. The point of that is we're not alone, and Alaskans aren't alone in our experience. And there are plenty of individuals and plenty of people throughout the country that have been harmed by this system. And I don't believe that is a good system for the state of Alaska. I'm not saying that our previous system was the best thing and the most perfect thing in the world, but it was easy to understand, and people, it's a system that we've been using in our country for 247 years.
Mr. Rison, I think you're getting a little off track from answering the question.
Well, no, I understand, but I'm just trying to.
I appreciate your answer.
Yeah, that was.
Thank you, and Chair Shaw.
The system point is that
Mr. Eisen,
the ranked choice system isn't nearly as easy to use as the old plurality.
Mr. Eisen.
Mr. Eisen, thank you. Last thing I'd like to note is everyone should be very careful about the way we look at data. We keep talking about low voter turnout. It was 5.44% drop from 2018 to 2022, and we keep saying that's because of ranked choice voting. From 2014 to 2018, we had a 6.24% drop in voter turnout. And so it's very convenient to make causation and play with data. And I would really ask everyone to look very carefully at the numbers.
Representative Armstrong, was that a follow-up?
That was just a comment because there's a lot of misinformation that is happening on the record in the legislature, and I'm just trying to make sure we have the correct information out there. I appreciate the chance to speak. Thank you.
Do we have any other questions or comments from the committee? Thank you, Mr. Eisen, for your presentation. Ms. Lucky is on standby. If anybody has any additional questions for her, we can bring her back up. Does anybody have any questions for Ms. Lucky? Seeing none. With that, before we hold the bill over, we have no additional questions for the sponsor. Any additional comments from the sponsor or his staff? On the way, Representative Allard.
Yeah, I just wanted to make a quick comment. I apologize for not speaking up sooner. Thank you, and I appreciate Representative Armstrong's comments, but I also would like to state that ranked choice voting has failed many, many people. And many people have complained about it. And if they didn't have the tens of millions of dollars to come in here and buy individual votes to buy into the ranked choice voting, we might not be here today. But all that saying, yes, we should be very careful of what we say on comment. And we should make sure that we don't make any accusations to any other fellow legislators in this body. Thank you.
Representative Roucher, final comments?
For the record, Representative Rauscher, District 29, I appreciate the opportunity. I would like to say, yes, that there is a low decline in voting, but ranked choice voting was supposed to build that up. It was supposed to raise that level of interest to vote, and it did not do that. And that's one of the things that we were sold on when we were voting for it. So I do appreciate the opportunity to present this bill, and I look forward to the testimony from the public. I also look forward to a closing statement when we get done with that testimony and we get done interviewing those people.
Thank you, Representative Rauscher. Very well. With that, we'll hold this bill to a later date. If any members would like to have any amendments considered for this bill, the amendment deadline is at noon on Wednesday, April 5th. If members would like their amendments considered by the committee, please have those amendments to my office by that time. Before we hold the bill over, does the bill sponsor have any final comments beyond what you've just highlighted?
I appreciate the committee hearing.
At this time, we'll hold the bill, House Bill 1, for consideration in another hearing. Thank you. Our next order of business is House Bill 37, entitled An Act Relating to Elections, Relating to Voters, Relating to the Crime of Unlawful Interference with Voting, and Providing for an Effective Date, sponsored by Representative Shragi. It's the first hearing for this bill. Following the committee, the bill has a referral to the House Judiciary Committee. It's our intention today to hear the initial presentation of the bill, to briefly discuss the fiscal notes for this bill, and to take invited testimony and public testimony. After that, it's our intention to hold the bill to take up at a later meeting. Representative Shragi is not here today, but his staff, Joan Wilkerson, is here to present the bill. Ms. Wilkerson, thank you for coming forward. If you would just please put yourself on the record and begin your presentation.
Through the chair, Chair Shaw, members of the House State Affairs Committee, good afternoon. My name is Joan Wilkerson. I am staff to Rep. Calvin Shragi, House District 12. He is home caring for his wife and his new baby girl who was born yesterday. He wanted very much to be here, and he will be here for subsequent meetings. I will read through the sponsor statement and the sectional analysis. If you wish, you can hold questions until the next hearing on this bill when Rep. Shragi will be here to answer them himself. If you prefer to ask them now, I'll do my best to answer clarification and bill interpretation questions. Policy and intent questions, I will defer to Rep. Shragi. But we will provide you with answers in writing before the next scheduled meeting on this bill in any case. In addition, Division of Elections staff are online to answer questions about current election processes, and Assistant Attorney General Thomas Flynn is available to answer questions about the current election statutes. Invited testimony includes Daniel Griffith, Senior Director of Policy at Secure Democracy USA, and Amber McReynolds, an expert on election administration and policy, former Colorado elections administrator, and current member of the Board of Directors of the United States Postal Service, to talk about some of the bill's provisions. Relating to the sponsor's statement, House Bill 37 seeks to ensure that every eligible Alaskan voter has the opportunity to participate in Alaska's elections in a safe, secure, and accessible manner, while ensuring valid votes are not rejected due to minor correctable errors. HB 37 accomplishes this by modernizing Alaska's elections, eliminating the witness signature requirement, establishing a signature verification system, creating a ballot curing process, and implementing same-day voter registration, among other changes. The purpose of HB 37 is to remove barriers to the ballot box at every stage of Alaska's election process, while promoting transparency and bolstering the integrity of Alaska elections. The sectional analysis. Section 1 removes language from AS 1505-010 requiring qualified voters to register before an election as stipulated in AS 1507. Section 2 amends AS 1507-060A to allow a person registering or re-registering as a voter to apply using an electronic signature. The section also amends AS 1507-060 to require those who are registered in another jurisdiction to acknowledge an understanding that the director will notify the chief elections officer of the other jurisdiction that the applicant has registered to vote in the state and request the applicant's voter's registration in the other jurisdiction be canceled. Also requires an applicant to acknowledge understanding that false statements on the application are subject to prosecution for perjury. Section 3 amends Alaska Statute 1507-060 to add a new subsection allowing an applicant to designate in which language the applicant prefers to receive the ballots and other election materials printed for the election based upon the written languages in which the division is required by 52 USC 10503 to print election materials. Also, it amends AS 1507-060 to require an applicant seeking registration within 30 days of election day to provide an affidavit attesting whether the applicant established residency at least 30 days before the election in the state and the House district in which the applicant seeks to vote, and to provide proof through governmental identification or bills displaying the applicant's name and Alaska residence address. Section 4 amends AS 1507-070C to stipulate that an applicant whose registration does not meet the requirements for placement on the master register for the next election may vote an absentee in-person, special needs, or question ballots in that election. Section 5 amends AS 1507-070D to stipulate that a qualified voter who registers within 30 days of an election may vote only an absentee in-person, special needs, or question ballot at that election. It removes the language making the person ineligible to vote at that election and restricts the division from rejecting the absentee in-person, special needs, or question ballot of a qualified voter who registered within 30 days of election on the grounds that the voter is not an official registration list. Section 6 amends 1507-070H, requiring the voter's certificate used for voting in absentee in-person special needs or question ballot to include instructions that a person registering to vote using the voter's certificate and wishing to declare the person's affiliation should complete the affiliation section on the certificate. Section 7 amends AS 1507-090B to stipulate that a person who has re-registered under the subsection may vote only in absentee in-person special needs or question ballot until the next election occurs at least 30 days after re-registration. The division may not reject the absentee in-person special needs or question ballot of a qualified voter who re-registers within 30 days before election day because the voter's name is not on an official registration list. Section 8 amends AS 1507-090C to require a person who within 30 days before election day has moved to a new precinct to vote only an absentee in-person special needs or question ballot. The division may not reject the ballot of a qualified voter who transferred registration within 30 days before election on the grounds the voter is not on the official registration list for the election. A voter must reside in the new House district for at least 30 days to vote a ballot for that district. Section 9 amends AS 1507-090D to stipulate that a qualified voter who registers within 30 days of election and for whom no evidence of registration in the precinct can be found may only vote an absentee in-person special needs or question ballot, and the division may not reject said ballot on the grounds the voter is not on the official registration list for the election. Section 10 amends AS 1507-130E to rename absentee voting stations early voting stations. Section 11 amends AS 1510-090 to require the division, whenever possible, to send two written notices of a change of precinct boundary or polling place designation. Section 12 amends AS 1510-170A to allow an organization sponsoring or opposing a ballot proposition to have watchers at polls and counting centers once authorized by the Director of Elections and signed acknowledgement of the watcher's appointment by the chairperson of the organization. Section 13 adds a new subsection to AS, should read 1515060, stipulating each polling place will provide language assistance as required by 52 USC 10503. Section 14 adds a new subsection to AS 1515170, prohibiting the display of photo or video images of a person's marked ballot near an election polling place if the display is an attempt to persuade a person to vote for or against a candidate or proposition. Section 15 amends AS 1515-280 to prohibit a voter from exhibiting the voter's marked ballot to an election official to enable the person to ascertain how the voter marked the ballot. Section 16 adds a new subsection to AS 1515-280 requiring that the prohibition against showing a marked ballot at a polling place does not apply to a voter who requests assistance voting under AS 1515-240 or subject to the prohibition on political persuasion within 200 feet of an entrance to the polling place, shares a photo of the voter's marked ballot. This section would allow the use of ballot selfies. Section 17 amends AS 1515-370 to add a stipulation requiring that when the Director of Elections publishes unofficial ballot total results, they will include the subsequent rankings selected by the voters who ranked that candidate as the voter's first choice. Section 18 adds a new subsection to AS 1515-430A to include in the director's review of the ballot counting voters' rankings for each candidate on the ballot. Section 19 amends AS 1520-020 to require the director make available instructions on how to use the online system for tracking absentee ballots established in AS 1520-221. Section 20 amends AS 1520-030 to include a postage-paid return envelope with the mail-in ballot and materials. It also adds a space for recording the date of the voter's signature declaring the person is a qualified voter. This section prohibits identification of a voter's party affiliation on the ballot envelope and also removes reference to the requirement of witness signatures. Section 21 amends AS 1520-045 to stipulate that a location designated as an early voting station will remain an early voting station for subsequent elections unless the location is no longer available for use or the director of the Division of Elections determines that the location is no longer appropriate. The section requires the director to provide public notice when a location is no longer appropriate for use as an early voting station. Pardon me. Section 22 amends AS 1520-045C to replace the term absentee voting station with the term early voting station. Section 23 adds a new subsection to AS 1520-045 requiring the director to appoint one or more registration officials to serve in early voting stations in all elections during the hours the station is open. Section 24 amends AS 1520-050 to require the director of elections to notify the public of the location of early voting stations, renames absentee voting stations as early voting stations. Section 25 is conforming language to rename absentee voting stations as early voting stations. Section 26 amends AS 1520-064B, specifying that verification of a voter's residence address appearing on the official registration list must be current for that election. Section 27 adds new subsection E to AS 1520-064 that requires a voter to cast an absentee ballot if a voter's eligibility to vote cannot be verified by an election official. Section 28 amends AS 1520072B to allow a voter through a representative to request a special needs ballot from an absentee voting official at an early voting station. This aligns AS 1520072B with renaming absentee voting stations as early voting stations for uniformity. Section 29 amends AS 2081B to require absentee ballot applications to permit the person to declare a political affiliation, if any. Section 30 amends AS 1520.081D to eliminate the witness requirements for absentee ballots. Section 31 amends AS 1520.081 to add a new subsection M that requires an absentee ballot application to include an option for a voter to choose to receive absentee ballots by mail for future regularly scheduled state elections. The new subsection stipulates that the director may require a voter to reapply to receive an absentee ballot by mail if the voter has not voted an absentee ballot for 4 years or the voter's previous absentee ballot was returned as undeliverable. Also adds new subsection N that requires the director to provide a ballot and election materials in a language other than English if a voter so requests at least 45 days before an election and if the requested language is one listed in 52 U.S.C. 10503. Section 32 amends AS 1520.201A to require the election supervisor to begin reviewing voter certificates and envelopes for absentee ballots 10 days before election day, which is 3 days earlier than current law. Also, this section adds the requirement that an absentee ballot may not be counted until a voter certificate has been reviewed. Section 33 amends AS 1520.203B to require the election board to reject an absentee ballot if the voter has not signed the certificate, if the ballot envelope and certificate is delivered postmarked or has a tracking barcode showing it was mailed after election day, or if the signature on the certificate does not match the voter's registration records. This section implements signature verification and removes the requirement of a witness signature on the certificate. Section 34 adds a new subsection K to AS 1520.203 requiring district absentee boards to verify the voter's signature on the certificate is consistent with the voter's signature in voter registration records. An exception is made for voters who vote absentee in person. Also requires the director to provide training and signature verification and signature comparison software for election officials reviewing signatures. Section 35 amends AS 1520.220B to add absentee ballots properly cured to the list of ballots to be reviewed by the State Review Board. Section 36 adds new subsection AS 1520.221, which establishes an online ballot tracking system designed to allow a voter to easily use the vote system through a mobile electronic device to confirm receipt and progression by date of the voter's ballot through the election system. The tracking system also indicates the process by which a voter can cure issues with the ballot, such as a lack of signature, a signature that does not match the signature on record, or identity verification questions. The system will also provide the reason a ballot was not counted. Section 1520.222 creates a procedure for curing uncounted ballots by allowing a voter to cure an absentee ballot rejected because a voter does not have a signature stored in voter registration records, failed to sign the certificate, the signature on the certificate does not match the signature in the voter registration records, or the voter provided insufficient proof of identity as required by AS 1520.081F. If a voter's absentee ballot was rejected on or before election day, the voter may attest in a sworn affidavit that the voter's absentee ballot was rejected and mark a question ballot. Section 37 amends AS 1520.800A to allow the Director of Elections to conduct an election by mail in small communities with a population of 750 or less, where the Division of Elections is unable to hire election workers, or in areas threatened by natural disasters, disease outbreak, or imminent terrorist attack. Also specifies that the provisions on disaster and disaster declarations apply to all communities, not just 750 or less people. Section 38 amends AS 1556.030D to specify that the postage paid return envelopes provided pursuant to AS 1520.030 for purposes of returning ballots do not constitute the crime of unlawful interference with voting, as they are considered an other valuable thing pursuant to AS 1556.030A. Section 39 amends AS 1516.199.1 to adjust the definition of election to include local elections as defined in AS 1580.010, conducted by the Division of Elections, not just state elections. Section 40 adds new section AS 1580.009 to establish a minimum compensation for election workers. Section 41 amends AS 2923.80C to authorize a municipal clerk to act as an absentee voting official for an early voting station under AS 1520.045B. Conforming language changing absentee voting station to early voting station is also included. Section 42 adds new subsection D to AS 2926050, which stipulates that a person living within a municipality for at least 30 days, but who has not registered to vote in state elections at a residence address within the municipality for at least 30 days before a municipal election, may vote only an absentee special needs or question ballot. The municipality may not reject the ballot of a qualified voter who registers within 30 days before election day because the voter is not on the official registration list. Section 43 repeals AS 2926050A3, requiring a voter to be registered at least 30 days before the municipal election at which time the person seeks to vote. Also repeals AS 1510170B and AS 1520203J and AS 2926050A3. Section 44 adds a new section to uncodified law stipulating the Division of Elections shall provide a report to the legislature by November 1st, 2025. Recommending options for expanding early voting in rural communities and low-income neighborhoods. Section 45 adds a new section to uncodified law on the applicability of AS 1556030D, stipulating that Section 38 of this section applies to offenses committed on or after the effective date of this bill. Section 46 adds a new section to uncodified law, stipulating the Division of Elections may adopt regulations necessary to implement the changes made by the bill in accordance with the Administrative Procedures Act. Section 47 stipulates Section 46 takes effect immediately, and Section 48 provides an effective date of January 1st, 2024 for the bill's provisions except for Section 47. With that, and I thank this body for your infinite patience in listening to me read all that. Are there any questions?
Sexual analysis are always so invigorating, and we definitely appreciate the time. Anyway, my understanding, there's a fiscal note for House Bill 37. Could you speak briefly to that?
I can. I can answer questions about it. I've only just received it, but I have reviewed it. And because it was written by the Division of Elections and we have folks online to speak to it, I assume that they would probably be the best people to ask questions of it.
In between, I'd like to welcome Senator Kawasaki to the committee. Online for questions, we have Thomas Flynn with Department of Law, Michaela Thompson with Division of Elections, and Carol Beecher also with Elections. Does anybody online want to make note of the fiscal note?
I'd like to welcome Senator Kawasaki. Online for questions, we have Thomas Flynn.
Can we get a brief at ease? Mute your computer. In the interim, let me have Representative Albert has a question.
Oh, thank you. Through the chair, thank you for being here today. I appreciate it. I was on the Ethics and Elections Committee for the municipality, and it was anything but ethical. And I feel like I have a little bit of PTSD sitting here today. But my question to you would be, by changing our current voting laws, who's this benefiting?
Through the chair, Representative Allard, that type of question is one of the questions that I asked be deferred for Representative Shragi to address. And I would be grateful if I could just answer questions about interpretation of the language of the bill.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Again, online, can you answer any questions or speak briefly to the fiscal note? Whoever that may be, Mr. Flynn.
For the record, my name is Carol Beecher. I'm the director of the Division of Elections, and I'm available for questions. And if I can't answer them, then I will call on Michaela Thompson.
Okay, our question is, do you want to make any comments relative to the fiscal note?
I would make one comment, and that is that in the fiscal note, when it speaks to the capital costs for the new systems that would be required, it should read that it would be a signature verification system implementation in each region, not in each district. So that would cover the five regions.
Okay, I appreciate that answer. Thank you. Okay, that brings us to invited testimony, where I think we have Daniel Griffith, Secure Democracy USA, via teleconference. We have, it doesn't look like Amber McReynolds is online. So, Mr. Griffith, are you on board?
Yes, Chair Shaw.
Welcome to the State Affairs. Please identify yourself and your affiliation for your, and give us your testimony.
Chair Shaw and members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to speak with the committee this afternoon. My name is Daniel Griffith, and I'm the Senior Director of Policy for Secure Democracy USA. Secure Democracy USA is a nonpartisan, nonprofit organization that works to maintain confidence in elections while also expanding voter access. We are active in state legislative advocacy in 19 states that span the ideological spectrum and also provide information and education concerning election policy in all 50 states. I hope to use the opportunity today to highlight several proposals in House Bill 37 with which our organization has significant experience concerning implementation and impact. We have assisted several states successfully implement these policies over the last few years and have seen the increase in voter confidence when policies enhance the security of elections, simplify election administration, and increase access to voters. First, HB 37 proposes a comprehensive online ballot tracking system similar to those offered in many other states. The online tracking system would add transparency to the absentee voting process by giving voters and election administrators ready access to information concerning the status of absentee ballot applications and completed ballots. Voters will gain confidence as they confirm the acceptance of their applications, the receipt of their ballot by election officials, and ultimately the counting of their ballot. The online tracking system would also, when necessary, instruct voters concerning a need to provide information that is missing from the certificate envelope or to confirm their identity for election officials. Over 30 states, including Texas, Montana, North Dakota, Indiana, and Florida, provide notice to voters with minor issues related to ballot verification and give them an opportunity to correct the error to have their ballot counted. This opportunity can prove especially critical, for senior voters, voters with disabilities, and active service members who rely on mail ballots to have their voices heard in democracy. The system proposed by HB 37 also highlights the election integrity benefits of a system that reaches out to voters concerning questions with their ballot certificates. If a voter contacted by election officials denies casting the ballot in question, the materials will be turned over to the Attorney General for additional investigation. Finally, HB 37 proposes to end Alaska's reliance on a ballot verification method that is steadily growing out of favor with other states, requiring a voter to have the ballot witnessed or notarized. This can prove especially challenging for individuals who live in remote areas who may have difficulty in obtaining a notary or obtaining another individual to serve as the witness for their ballot signature. Some states with such a witness or notary requirement have taken action to eliminate the requirement. Most recently, both chambers of the Virginia General Assembly passed legislation nearly unanimously to end the Commonwealth's witness requirement. HB 37 would replace the witness and notary requirement with signature verification, which is by far the most common method of ballot verification, used by many Western states like Wyoming, South Dakota, and Nebraska, as well as states with high volumes of mail ballot voters like Florida and Utah, which runs its elections almost exclusively by mail ballot. In the past few years, Secure Democracy USA has worked with state lawmakers in several states, including Kentucky, Texas, and Missouri, to include tracking, cure, and signature verification provisions in bills dedicated to improving election security. As this committee and the chamber continues to consider improvements to Alaska elections, they should keep the success of these provisions in mind. Secure Democracy is hopeful to be a resource for Alaska lawmakers in the same way that we have in other states. Once again, I wish to thank the chair and the members for the opportunity to speak to you, and I look forward to answering any questions you may have.
Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Griffith. Do we have any questions specific to Mr. Griffith? Seeing none, we have Pat Race in the room if he'd like to come up and speak. Take any of these. That brings us to public testimony. I'll go ahead and open public testimony now. And we do have one person in the room that would like to speak to, on behalf of the bill, Mr. Pat Race. Please identify yourself and your affiliation.
Yeah.
And begin your testimony. And if you would, please, we've got a little bit of time crunch here.
So yeah, I'll go quick. For the record, my name is Pat Race. I actually came here today to support Julie Lucky. I'm a new board member with Alaskans for Better Elections, but I'm not here testifying on this bill in that capacity. I just happened to be in the room and heard it, and there's a lot of great pieces of this. I am interested in elections, and that's why I got involved in that organization. The things I'm hearing here that I like are the elimination of the witness signature requirement and the move to a signature verification system. I like this because it improves access to voting. It allows people to be more successful in voting. There's a KTOO article here that references a report from the Division of Elections. It says the biggest reason for rejections was a lack, this is in the most recent election, was a lack of witness signatures, accounting for more than a third of rejected ballots. So in answer to the question earlier, I think the people that this bill would help are those people whose votes were not counted in the most recent election. And I think that this would go a long way to helping those voters be successful and have an opportunity to cure any errors made on their in their process. Now, you can't do a lot about the people who got in late, but you can. But providing a curing process is a good idea. Improving access to voter registration is something I like, and I like this idea of a tracking process because it does give people the security that their vote has arrived and been received and counted. Alaska has a, as we all know, is a vast geographic area, and I think that turning election, if we're not going to turn on election day into a holiday and give everyone a chance to get out and vote, I like the idea of treating it more like a deadline so that everyone has an opportunity to mail in their ballot on time. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Reyes, for that testimony. It looks like we have a number of folks online for providing testimony to House Bill 37. Again, for the consideration of time, we'll probably get through a few of these folks. We'll start out with Barbara Tindall. Are you online, Ms. Tindall?
Yes, I am.
Yeah, please give us your name and your affiliation and begin your testimony. And if you could, please limit this to 2 minutes.
Sure. My name is Barbara Tindall. I am representing myself. I'm from North Pole. And I'm speaking today to express a resounding no on HB 37. Which would greatly weaken the integrity of our voting system in Alaska. I keep hearing things like confidence. I have no confidence in anything electronic. I'm an older person, and I have worked elections for like 15, 20, probably 20-plus years. And I just see this as a way for people to twist the system. And most of us have no confidence in our election system, the way some of these things are coming down. To not require witness on mail-in ballots is absurd. How are we to verify or know who is voting? It's one more link in the chain of election fraud. Same-day registration has been identified by the Heritage Foundation as a huge flaw in elections. Election officials need sufficient time, 30 days, to verify the accuracy of the registration information on the form and confirm the eligibility of the person seeking to vote. I'm just asking you to please vote no on HB 37 and restore our election system integrity. Thank you.
Thank you for that testimony, Ms. Tindall. We're going to hold off on questions just because of consideration of time.
Sure.
Thank you. Sue Sheriff with the League of Women Voters, are you online?
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Please give us your name and your affiliation and begin your testimony.
Sure. My name is Sue Sheriff, and I'm co-president of the League of Women Voters of Alaska, and I am speaking on behalf of the organization. Thanks for the opportunity to testify, and we are speaking in support of moving HB 37 forward. We need to make sure that our elections are safe and secure. We all agree, but we also need to make sure that our election procedures are not creating barriers to qualified voters and seeing that their votes count. HB 37 addresses many election process improvements, as we just heard, but I'd like to highlight three that the League supports particularly. First, the prepaid postage for absentee and mail-in ballots. The fact that some elections require more postage than others on the mail-in ballot or the absentee ballot, and that some areas there's contracted mail service with limited hours, and in some cases you may not even be able to buy a stamp locally. Second, the establishment of the signature verification process and eliminating the witness signature. The Division of Elections should be verifying the voters' identity, no doubt, but not relying on an often illegible signature of a witness who's not identified in any other way, any meaningful way, on the cover envelope for mail ballots. And third, the ballot cure process that's been described earlier, that is, according to my information, is used in 24 states ranging from Florida to the state of Washington, allows the voters a chance to provide missing information before their vote is discarded. The work of identifying problems is now taken up. After the election has essentially taken place, the work to identifying what the problems are is done, but instead the voters are notified after the election is over and their ballot is rejected. And often these are correctable mistakes, and we think that Alaskans, like citizens in other 24 other states, should have a chance to correct these. So these are three steps that, if passed, would give more Alaskan voters a chance to make sure their votes count. And I think that there are concrete examples in all cases of people who have had problems with each of these three points that would see their votes accepted and verified in a way that in the past they may not have been. So we urge that these provisions of ballot, of House Bill 37 be move forward for consideration. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Sheriff. Next, we have Michael Garvey online. Are you there?
I am here.
Mr. Garvey, please give us your name and give us your affiliation and begin your testimony.
Thank you, Chair Shaw and members of the committee. My name is Michael Garvey, and I am calling in representing the American Civil Liberties Union of Alaska. House Bill 37 would take steps to make Alaska's elections more inclusive and improve the democratic process. We need to ensure that Alaskans' constitutional right to vote can be exercised in practice, and House Bill 37 would do that in a number of ways we detail in a letter to the committee. One specific aspect I want to urge support for today is the ballot curing provision. The state's special primary election last June showed that Alaska needs a ballot curing process for statewide elections. 5% of ballots overall were rejected, but rejection rates were above 15% in rural districts with predominantly Alaska Native voters, as well as 9% in the Mountain View District in Anchorage. Many of these rejections were for benign and easily fixable mistakes, such as the lack of voter identifier or witness signature, which was the single biggest reason why ballots were rejected. These were also common reasons why absentee ballots were rejected during the regular primary and general elections. When the state doesn't provide voters a way to fix these mistakes, it disenfranchises them. Our organization is part of active litigation seeking relief for this problem, but the legislature can and should take this issue out of the courts and make sure there is a ballot curing process ahead of the 2024 elections. House Bill 37 also includes other provisions that would help voters participate in elections, including providing paid postage and allowing voters to choose to vote absentee for future elections. We urge the committee to move forward these sensible policy changes. Finally, while we appreciate that House Bill 37 includes provisions intended to help ensure Alaska meets its obligations to communities requiring language assistance, we believe those sections should be examined further to ensure they did not negate the important language assistance progress reflected in settlements from lawsuits when Alaska was found to have violated Section 203 of the Voting Rights Act. Thank you to the committee for taking up this legislation and providing an opportunity to comment on it today.
Thank you, Mr. Garvey, for that testimony. That's all we have for folks online. Seeing no one else to testify in the room, I am closing public testimony on House Bill 37. With that, we'll hold the bill over. Are there any additional questions from members of the committee or for the bill sponsor or from the bill sponsor? Very well. With that, we will hold this bill to a later date. If any members would like to have amendments considered for this bill, the amendment deadline is at noon on Wednesday, April 5th. Members would like for their amendments to be considered by the committee, please have it to my office by that time. Before we hold the bill over, does the bill sponsor have any final comments to make?
No, Chair Shaw. Thank you.
At this time, we'll hold House Bill 37 for consideration at another hearing. And with that, the meeting is adjourned at 5:02 this afternoon.